Welcome to Journey to the Sunny Side, the podcast where we have thoughtful conversations to explore the science of habits, uncover the secrets to mindful living, and of course, inspire your own mindful drinking journey. This podcast is brought to you by Sunnyside, the number one alcohol moderation platform. And if you could benefit from drinking a bit less, head on over to sunnyside.co to get a free 15-day trial. I'm your host, Mike Hardenbrook, published author, neuroscience enthusiast, and habit change expert. Today, I'm very excited to welcome Chris Voss, former FBI hostage negotiator and best-selling author of Never Split the Difference. In this episode, Chris reveals how high-stakes negotiation techniques can be effectively used to handle peer pressure related to alcohol. He'll break down these strategies that you can use to confidently navigate discussions with friends, family, and even yourself. Tune in to learn how to turn challenging conversations into positive and supportive interactions. Okay, today I'm really excited about this one. I have Chris Voss with us here on Journey to the Sunny Side. Chris, thanks for coming on.
Hey, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you have an incredible background, and it goes back many years. And so I kind of want to start off with a story. Can you share one of your favorite stories when it comes to negotiation, reaching back to your very seasoned past?
Well, the first real serious negotiation I ever got into, a bank robbery with hostages at the Chase Manhattan Bank in Brooklyn at the time. And bank robberies with hostages was actually negotiations, a rare event. Usually the bad guys are long gone before the police show up. They know we're on the way. And if they're still there when we get there, usually it's quite possibly a suicide by cop situation. So the classic bargaining for hostages with bank robbers who want to get away, while it happens in the movies all the time, is a really rare event. And what day of the week was it? I think it was a Friday morning. One Friday morning, actually. Because I remember I had the next day off because the next day was my son's birthday. And it was a Saturday and I was going to take him fishing. Plus, also, the NYPD detectives, they held a talk to the press, had some more press follow-up the next day, which was a weekend, and I was off, so I wasn't involved. But bank robbery with hostages and bad guys on the inside thought they were going to get away before the police showed up and didn't. And it was a great negotiation. The first bank robber that surrendered to me personally out in front of the bank. And it was a great team effort. You know, everything works best in a system. A team is a system. A life is a system. Your calendar is a system. The clock is a system. And the critical moments in the negotiations, I'm a coachable person. If nothing else, I'm coachable. And I take initiative. Somebody handed me a note because they heard things in what the bank robber was saying that nobody else really heard, and made some serious pivots. I was working on the bank robber to let a hostage go, and one of the negotiators listening in, their gut instinct that this guy wanted to come out. And so I got the note that that said, ask him if he wants to come out. So I stopped working on the hostage and I said, do you want to come out? And the guy says, I don't know how I do it, which is a great big giant yes. If you can lay the groundwork for me getting out of here, I'm coming out. And it was a great thing. We got all the hostages out, all the bank robbers surrendered. Took about 12 hours, and it was a once in a lifetime event.
Wow, that's incredible. Was there a time in your life that led you to this point? Like, did you say, I want to be a negotiator, or was it just something that like unfolded? Was there any like moment in time where you were just like, yes, I'm very good at this, and this is where I'm going?
No. No. Like, my original plan was to be a cop in a police department, and I wanted to be on the SWAT team. So, I consider myself a medium-sized dude. You know, there are a lot of people much bigger and much more dangerous than me on the street. And so I decided to sharpen my odds. For whatever reason, you know, I thought martial arts instead of boxing. when I was in college and I ripped my knee apart, had knee reconstruction. And then ultimately when I was first office, FBI Pittsburgh, I was on a SWAT team there. But then when I got to New York, I hurt my knee again, had another knee reconstruction, and thought, you know, SWAT's a lot of fun, but I can only get hurt so many times. And we had negotiators. The negotiators always went along. I didn't know what they did. I figured it didn't look hard. You know, how hard could it be? And it wasn't until after I was trained. And before I got trained, I volunteered on a suicide hotline because I was, as pointed out to me by the negotiation team leader in New York, I was eminently unqualified to become a negotiator. I had no qualifications whatsoever. When I volunteered on the suicide hotline, that really, when I kind of caught the bug to influence people just based on words.
Yeah. Do you think it was the human element of it, or did you like the challenge? Was it the impact that you were making, or was it a mix of everything?
Yeah, it was all of the above. I was astonished at how quickly you could influence people with empathy. Not sympathy, not compassion. Empathy is a very drawing, very fine, but very clear lines. Empathy, the focus really is you demonstrate that you understand, you neither agree nor disagree. And you don't have to feel it, no common ground required. Just demonstrate that you understand. And when I learned that on a hotline, the astonishing thing about it was every call lasted 20 minutes or less. You get there the first day and they say, you're going to have a time limit for 20 minutes on your calls. And your reaction to that is, no. I mean, you hear these stories about people talking to somebody that's suicidal all night long. Richard Branson, in his first book, Losing My Virginity, I remember reading, he did some crisis intervention work in his younger days, and he'd spend the night talking to people. And 20 minutes? And they said, yeah, as a matter of fact, if you do it right, it'll take less time than that. And when I saw the effectiveness of that sort of influence, that was when I was really bit by the bug.
Yes. I mean, I remember going back to my entrepreneurial career, and I picked up the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. And it seemed so straightforward, yet I wasn't practicing it. It made such a big impact in my career, in my business development, partnerships, and just continued to go back to it and use it. At one point when you were a negotiator and you came out of your career, or maybe this was during your career, did you start thinking, these are everyday, every person kind of tactics and strategies that people can apply? Was there a moment that you just started thinking about this?
I remember thinking about it a lot on the hotline thing, and my thought was really like, why is it just have to be people in crisis that benefit from empathy? Why can't it be the people that you work with, the people in your personal life? And so I started applying it, and it was just really reading people's emotions and articulating them back, what emotions you saw. And I remember one time talking to this young lady in New York, professional colleague. She said, you're reading my mind. And all I was reading was her emotions, because emotions are there. I mean, they're in your face. They're in your tone of voice. There's all this massive information. And I started applying it in my personal and professional life. And there are nuances to it that cause you to have to adapt to it. You know, the NYPD is sort of famous for this stuff works with hostages, just don't do it at home. And my answer to that is, some about that sounds wrong. And what I found was you've got to adapt it to the perspective of the people at home, which takes a little more work. But yeah, it was on the hotline. I thought, this has got to apply to everyday life. And it does.
Yes. Talk to me a little bit about empathy, because I find this one particularly difficult to do without coming across like inauthentic or patronizing somebody.
It's practice, expanding the skill set. Like in the Black Swan method, you know, our approach to negotiation, we took the FBI's 8 hostage negotiation skills and adapted them into business. It's very close to what the FBI was all along. And a crazy thing about that, and probably why, you know, it takes some practice or some instruction, actually. I went to Harvard Law School's negotiation course as a student in 2004. I was still with the FBI. And they talked a lot about what was referred to as active listening. I think that's a poor term for it. But one of the professors up there said, active listening is a stealth weapon of effective negotiation. And I remember, it was Bob Bourdon. And I remember at the time thinking like, ooh, that's sexy. Yeah, I kind of like that. But then the list of skills that Harvard had was remarkably vague, you know, unrefined, unclear. When you're teaching negotiation skills in law enforcement, especially to local cops, I taught local cops a lot, you know, they're practical group. If you don't define something quite clearly, which is really kind of Einstein thinking, I think Einstein would said, if you can't explain something in plain English, you don't understand it. And we took the FBI skills and we defined them very specifically. A label is, it sounds like you're angry. Each word is very specifically chosen. You don't say, what I'm hearing is anger. You say, it sounds like you're angry. Quite clear, concise. And that would be one definition of a label. Harvard didn't have that. And I think I don't know what the hell they called it. Quite frankly, I don't remember. I think they talked about open-ended questions. And even then, what I teach now, what my company teaches is far more clear, concise, granular than that. Then if you take these 9 skills and you practice applying them, each one does kind of a different thing. And, you know, your original question was authenticity. It might be the skill for the moment, whether you use a label. It sounds like this has hurt you deeply. Or when they just say to you, you know, I'm really upset, I've been very frustrated. And to mirror that would be to say, you're very frustrated? There's an emphasis on repetition of the words. There's also a nuance to and tonality. That's our 9th skill, tonality. So what it really is for authenticity is just practice. Usually when people are fed back, you know, the wife doesn't like it, the colleague doesn't like it, you know, they react like they were using a skill on me. It's only a matter of practice. And with enough practice and intention has a smell. As long as your intention is to really talk with people, then you get to practice in and the authenticity thing will be solved.
I love that. And the mirroring thing I need to get a little bit better at, because as an interviewer, that's a way for me to draw more information out of guests as they maybe talk about a subject that I'd like to draw more out of, but I don't have more questions after that. So it's a good way to just elaborate more. And I'm constantly trying to remind myself of it. And you just reminded me of it here.
Yeah, it's practice. I mean, it's just a matter of practice. I'm a big believer in nurture, which is pretty much, we're very much a blank slate when we're born and everything really is learned. And so you can learn it. Anybody can if they're open to it.
I mean, I think that's reassuring to hear that you think as an expert that everything can be learned, that it's not all natural born, because then we can just continue to get better and better without feeling like maybe we were limited by what we were given.
1000%. You know, you can't grow past a certain height. You know, I always wanted to, as a kid, I wanted to be an NBA player. I always wanted to be 6'7". I thought 6'7" was a magic number. You know, my body stopped going at about 6 feet. So other than that, maybe that's why, you know, this line of work was better for me.
Yeah, I can identify. I remember being a kid on our driveway shooting baskets after reading a story about Larry Bird that they used to set up a light at night. And I'd be like, I'm going to be like Larry Bird and shoot all night in practice. But I couldn't make myself grow above 6 feet either.
Yeah, Bird, even Bird had some physical advantages, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, a lot of people that are listening are interested in cutting back on their alcohol. And I think a big part of that is the conversation negotiations that they have both in the home, out in social settings, and with themselves. And when somebody's going to start a new big change in their habits, whether it be diet or alcohol, or maybe even changing their career. A big conversation of that starts in the home. How do you see approaching your partner inside the home and say, hey, listen, I'm going to make this change. I'm going to start cutting back. Maybe this is like they're your drinking partner. Maybe they don't understand. Maybe they're actually like against it. Do you have like some thoughts on like some ways that we could approach like this? Maybe not a negotiation, but the conversation itself.
Habits have momentum, and to start with, but the conversation itself. If it's a drinking partner or your social partner, think about what you know what the objective is. You're trying to have establish a great relationship with one another. You're trying to spend quality time together. You're trying to enjoy life together. Agree on what the ultimate outcome is. And the change all at once is scary. You know, you really kind of want to, you got into a bad situation a little at a time. I think getting out of it a little at a time should be part of your strategy. So what was the overall objective to begin with? Pick that up. Pick a point in time the two of you can agree is a goal of happiness for both of us. And then change the root of how we get there. You know, how do we work our way back from there? What's a healthier way so that we can get there and sustain it or have it more often or have it be even better? And, you know, that's the starting point. If a collaboration agreement is, you know, how do we pick a spot in the future that we both agree is cool? And then we work our way back. When I'm a hostage negotiator, I'm talking to a bank robber. And I call him on the phone and I'll say, hey, just want you to know, there's a SWAT team outside. And if you don't agree to go to jail, we're going to kill you. That's not really the approach. What you're doing is stupid. You know, the first line for hostage negotiators really is, I want you to live. You know, that's picking a point in the future that we're both good with. I'm looking for an outcome where you live. Now, how we get there is the challenge for us to navigate. View negotiation as a synonym to navigation, great collaboration, getting ourselves together to a good spot. There's going to be some bumps in the road. You know, let's talk about how we get someplace where we want to be. And then, you know, implementation is a critical issue. There's going to be bumps in the road. In any given negotiation, I said a long time ago, yes is nothing without how. And now I actually say, yes is nothing, how is everything. How do we stay on track? How do we address it when we fall off track? You and I have a business deal. An agreement for a great outcome in our business life. And stuff's going to come up. It's going to throw us. Pretending like we're not going to get thrown is crazy. It also causes us to be more unsettled when we do. Let's talk about how we keep track, how we stay on track, and how we communicate when we're off track and how we address it. That's a smart negotiation. So here's where I want to go. You know, we need, here are the components. You know, here are the five pillars to life. Sleep, diet, exercise, quality relationships, and spirituality. Well, we're going to make mistakes. You know, how do we get back on track when we do? How do we continue to collaborate all the way through? Any agreement, if you ignore that there's going to be problems, that's just setting yourself to be fully thrown when there are. You promised this and you didn't do that and you didn't tell me. You know, when you run into problems without talking about implementation to a goal, thinking about it in advance, especially addressing the problems in the implementation, what happens when one side keeps really quiet when you start to run into trouble? And so then finally, you don't find out about it until it's been a problem for a while. So it's a system thinking, implementation thinking to every step of the way, and then the recognition that we're human, and or there's stuff we're just not going to anticipate, or you know, we're going to fall back into a bad habit. You know, how do we pull ourselves back up out of that so it's a net positive we continue to move forward. You know, there was a fraternity when I was in college that, you know, their philosophy was always forward, never straight.
Yeah. So for example, hearing what you just said, let's say a couple, you know, we're not talking like problematic. They just want to make healthier choices and they're drinking, you know, a moderate amount of wine 4 to 5 nights a week with dinner or something. And the husband comes up and says, you know, I've been noticing I've been waking up a little more cloudy. My sleep's been kind of crappy. I'm gaining a little bit of weight, thinking about cutting back so that my health can be better, my sleep can be better. And then the next step would be implementation, which would be like, hey, you know, I saw this Sunnyside app that lets you track your drinking and you can reduce and set goals. This is something that I'm thinking about doing. So is that kind of like the working backwards strategy a little bit? Maybe not worded, of course, that way. But that's what I'm kind of hearing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and see, the thing like an app, a Sunnyside app.
Yeah.
Anything that's giving you feedback will help you keep on track. You start to pay attention. You start to get a little more, competitive with yourself, whether you're competitive or you're ambitious. You know, in business, I like to say, you know, you should measure what's important, what's measured keeps you conscious of it, and then what's measured and reported improves exponentially. So just in terms of being a human being, any way at all that you're keeping track of your health data starts to move you in the direction of improvement. And it's actually kind of fun. So the more you can keep track of it, you feel good about your improvement. Or when you slip a little and you notice you don't feel as good, it's far easier to get back on track and continue to improve incrementally if you've got a way of reporting the stuff back to you. It's a smart move. It's an insightful, effective way to actually get better. If you're not paying attention to the numbers, whatever it is, you're making it harder on yourself to get better than you need to. So any way that you can keep track, and an app that helps you keep track, is always going to make your life easier, less stressful.
So well said. It really is. Like, you know, what is it? What's not measured doesn't get done. I probably slaughtered that, but yeah, really, you know, like, I'm curious to ask you to take that point further. So in the house, you know, you're kind of in a more, well, hopefully, loving and accepting environment. Out in social settings, I think a lot of people, when they're cutting back, they feel like that, first of all, they're going to be under a microscope, which is truly not the case, because people really just are so about themselves that they're not noticing what you're drinking or how much or anything like that.
You know, I'm telling you, that's so true. I mean, they really don't care.
Yeah.
They might make a crack, but assume they got ADHD. They're going to be on to the next sparkly, shiny object. They just don't care because, you know, they're struggling with their own issues. You know, what's that? I keep seeing this cartoon every now and then. On one side, you know, this person is distraught and they go, nobody cares. And the flip side of it is they're really happy and they say, nobody cares.
As in, it's a good thing.
You know, there's a liberation there.
Yeah. Yeah, that was definitely liberating when I a few things I said to myself is nobody cares. And, you know, you're not as important as you're not so important that everybody's going to give you the focus right in the room all the time. You know, I mean, you can, not to take away from self-importance, but just to say, back it off a little bit. You don't have to put so much pressure on yourself.
Yeah, you know what? You can experiment in little ways. I mean, you give me an idea today, you know, because sometimes I get ready to go to the gym. I'm like, you know, do I wear black socks with, you know, do I wear white socks? You know, I don't remember what the social protocols are. And then I think, you know, nobody really cares what socks I wear. And actually, when I go to the gym today, I'm going to wear one black and one white just for the hell of it. And nobody's going to care.
I love it. Are you going to do it?
Oh, yeah. You know, 1,000%. Because, you know, to some degree, everybody gets, you know, I get in my head sometimes. You know, what does somebody think of this? What does somebody, you know, especially when I'm going to the gym, like big social situation that exists in our brain. Like nobody cares. And, you know, I'm like, you know, do I look cool? You know, nobody cares. I'm going to go in, I'm going to get my work after that. I'm going to wear one black, one white, just to prove that nobody cares.
Totally. I mean, people are so in their head. So I want to get your feedback since I got the expert here. And maybe your answer to this question will be, I don't negotiate with terrorists. But what if you have a friend that's coming up and just keeps, you know, at you like, hey, come on, have a drink. And you're like, nah, like, you know, not right now. Or I'm taking a break. Nah, it's only one. Don't worry about it. Like, don't make me drink alone. All the typical kind of stuff. Like, what would your like reaction be to handling those kind of situations?
Well, I think life is this amazing prospect. I think the world is getting better on a regular basis. I think if you take an objective look at the data, that's 1,000% correct. Like this woe is me thing, but I'm an optimistic human being. Consequently, the idea of having an amazing life, I believe, is completely within my grasp. Consequently, the people around me are going to have that impact. I believe simultaneously you want to go fast, go alone, you want to go far, go as a team. I believe your income is the average of the five people in your inner circle. I believe if you're making more money than everybody in your inner circle, it's the wrong circle. Again, your question is, what if you got somebody that's pestering you all the time? That person is on the way out of my life. This was a hard thing for me to accept. And I came to it very late in life, about five-ish years ago or so. I'm still teaching at USC. Just before the book came out, I think. And I got a guest lecturer, a gentleman named Michael Levine. Previously one of the most influential PR guys in Hollywood. So Michael's not retired. I got him lecturing to the class on success. And he stands up in front of the class and says, fire your flaky friends. Fire your flaky friends. And I remember thinking, geez, that's harsh. You know, now this is after I've left the bureau, so I'm 50 plus here. I retired at 50. I got a lot of life, and I hadn't really grasped that concept. But, you know, what if, you know, I went to high school with them? What if I went to college with them?
Yeah.
And what if we got these shared experiences? I feel bonded to them. I feel loyalty. Is that lack of loyalty there? I don't see myself as a disloyal person. And initially I wasn't willing to accept it. And now I'm 1,000% there. You know, if you're...
What changed that?
Possibly through the course of my learning journey, really, really post-FBI. It lined up with... another concept that I learned, a business concept about core values. You know, what do I believe in as a human being? Mm-hmm. What are the values that drive my life? And the business consultant, still a consultant and friend, said, you'll find that all your business or personal relationships succeed or fail based on alignment of core values. And if I'm success oriented, and I am, and a delight in life oriented, I believe in having people whose values line up with mine. And so if they want me to engage in behaviors that are not healthy for me, because health is a core value, then we're a bad match. not only are they a bad match for me, I'm a bad match for them. I'm not helping them if I'm a bad match for them. I'm standing in the way of someone who could be helping them if I'm a bad match for them. And, you know, both of us need to move on. It's like being in a bad personal relationship. You're standing in the way of the person they should be with. They should be spending time with. The harsh reality of it is, if they're not good for me, I'm not good for them. And then they own their journey. So I get somebody who's constantly pestering me to drink with them. The person's going to be on their way out of my life.
Mm. Yeah, it's so true. I've sort of learned that in my own kind of way. And sometimes when I guess you'd say give more grace, sometimes it really does come back to bite you and you realize, no, I need to stick to being with people that align with my values and where I'm going.
And you're not good for them either. I mean, some of it, it's a bad match. You know, we're not a good, if we're not living healthy together, then some kind of way I'm getting in their way too.
So instead of like, let me think of something here as a scenario to this. So like, let's say you're sharing with a friend over lunch that, you know, you're taking a break and the conversation is not that they're trying to get you to drink, but the conversation is probing and questioning and not in that positive inquisitive way, but more like maybe you have a problem. Maybe they're a judgment. Maybe they're just doing like some psychological, you know, like poking at you. But you don't want to say like at that dinner or lunch, we don't align, I'm just going to leave. And maybe like, you know, they were having a moment. How do you deal with that scenario? I think is the first question. And then do you give it some time to see if it keeps recurring before sort of like, you know, fire your flaky friend?
Well, the question behind a question is always more important than the question being asked. Mm-hmm. You know, what are they struggling with? Somebody asked me a question that, you know, I'm failing both of us if I don't find out what's driving the question in the first place. I think there's an entire book out there called The Question Behind the Question. It's so important. What's driving it? And they actually, they'll feel better in interacting with me if I get at what's driving them. I mean, that was one of the things from way back on the suicide hotline. You know, get at what's driving them. You know, what in the window pane of their mind is, are they blind to that they're being driven by? What are they hiding that they're being driven by that they wish we could see, that they are afraid to open it up to us? You know, the suicide hotline was really driving it was getting at unearthing, helping them gain insight into those two window panes. What are they blind to that's driving them? What are they hiding that's driving them? People love you to discover what they're hiding because they're afraid that you'd be judgmental. You know, the hotline was about observational is by definition non-judgmental. And that's one of the lines between empathy and sympathy and compassion. You know, there's a certain amount of judgment taking sides on sympathy and compassion. Compassion is you're trying to get into the rescuer's role in some sense, which is frequently not that good because if they need you to rescue them, they're helpless by themselves and they'll always be lost. So find out what's driving the question. And it's going to be something, feedback to them as simple as, what makes you ask? What's driving this? What are you struggling with? You know, there's a variety of ways to gently. It's usually going to be a what or how question. What and how questions are feel deferential. People are far more open to them. And use what or how to drive it. What is a person really trying to communicate with you by probing you, by asking you those questions?
Yes, so good, because I actually did quite a bit of research. And so I actually wrote a book on helping people. And part of that was helping people with alcohol. And part of that was dealing with social situations and pushing back from others. And the fortunate thing is that I think that society is starting to shift that narrative right now, and that it's becoming more accepting and realizing that alcohol might not be the greatest thing for us. And that just because you want to take a step back doesn't mean that you have a major problem. You're just, it's the same thing as like, maybe I'm not going to eat as much French fries and hamburgers. You know, I still might eat them, but I'm not going to eat as many. You know,
it's a simple health choice, right? It's a joy of life choice.
Yeah. And part of that is like, if you do encounter that, it really isn't a reflection on you. It's a reflection on them. You know, there are many things like, if they're not drinking, then it makes me think about my drinking and maybe I feel bad about my drinking already. Or maybe, you know, if like a fraternity or maybe it's a mom's group, you know, like all of a sudden there's that tribe mentality. Maybe you're not part of our tribe. You're not one of us anymore. And that really doesn't have anything to do with the individual.
Right, right. It's their sense of belonging, so to speak, that's at stake.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that like having these negotiations with people where maybe many people are like very timid or scared to have these conversations, but they end up just having them anyways, and they take some structure, they listen to Chris Voss and his strategies, and they go in and they start having them, and maybe they don't feel like they win, but they feel like they went the way they wanted them to. Do you think that that sets people up long term for success in the goals that they're discussing in general?
Yeah, I think it's incremental. I think we really kind of kick our own ass by setting big short term goals. You know, what's the phrase? And so many of them are cliche. We overestimate what we can get done in a year. We underestimate what we can get done in 10. I think that's people trying to get too far too fast. You get there a little at a time, and then if you have a bad day, if your goal is just to get a little bit better today, and you miss it, you're like, all right, so, you know, I'm not set back that far. I was just trying to get 1 degree better. You know, we spend a lot of time kicking our own ass, which is a tremendous waste of time.
Yeah,
I'm trying to coach a guy in my company who was just not learning. And he kept making the same mistake over and over again. And he looked at me one day and he said, you know, I'm really kicking myself right now. And the reality of the situation, I said to him, was like, you got the opportunity to make one move right now. You take a step forward, or with that same amount of effort, you can kick yourself. I prefer you took a step forward. It's not a lot. But any time spent kicking your own ass, could have been time just taking a baby step forward instead. Look at where you're at. Kicking your ass doesn't do anybody any good. It doesn't do you any good.
Yeah, the self-talk is so important, and I see it all the time, and it hurts me to see it. You know, and especially around alcohol, people post things on Facebook in groups like, "Oh, I slipped up yesterday. I'm pathetic," or you know, "I'm weak," and all these things, and that just really doesn't serve an individual.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Calling yourself names doesn't help. Self-labeling your negative emotions is actually very helpful. And what do I mean by that? Sounds like you're scared. It's okay. Don't say to yourself, don't be afraid. If you've got a fear, if you've got a concern, if you've got something holding you back, say out loud 3 times, I'm scared, I'm scared, I'm scared. Every time you say that, the fear goes away a little bit. And I find I do this myself. By the time I say it the 3rd or 4th time, I'll literally say, fuck it, I'm not scared anymore. You know, you can deal with your negative emotions by just calling them out.
I've never done that. I'm going to start trying it, though.
Give it a try. Yeah,
I like give it that. A try. Well, you know, I think this actually leads into another question that I had really well, and that is, about habit change, and specifically here, you know, for those listening that are trying to change their habits around alcohol, how do we negotiate it with ourselves? Maybe we're negotiating, why am I doing this? Maybe we're negotiating is it's not that big a deal. I'm going to break my commitment today, or I'm not strong enough to do it. Like, how can we use your expertise in negotiations with ourselves?
How do we negotiate with ourselves?
Yep.
All right, so here's what I've been asking everybody that I'm talking to lately that's listening to me at all. Switch into system thinking. Everything is a system. Your system is perfectly designed to give you the outcome that you've obtained. What does this have to do with negotiating with yourself? Change one small behavior. You know, what is it? Insanity is repeating the same behavior, expecting a different result.
Yep.
Start tweaking the system. You don't have to negotiate with yourself to do something big. Pick a tweak in the system. Just agree on something small within the system of how you cope with the day. What's the first thing you do when you get up in the morning? Well, your morning is set up by last night. So how do I set up tomorrow? How much coffee do I drink? You know, how much do I stress myself out throughout the course of the day, where the alcohol is a way to alleviate stress? What are my circadian rhythms? Am I caffeinate my way all through the day? And so then by the end of the day, I got to have a drink at the end of the night just to let go of all the tension, the cortisol that built up through the course of the day. I mean, everything that you do accumulates in one way or another. So if you want to negotiate with yourself, pick something small that seems innocuous, but is probably going to have a rolling effect throughout your day. And don't ask too much of yourself from the very beginning. Pick something low. And then give yourself a small win. And reinterpret anything as a victory. A lot of this is, do I have a task of to-dos, or do I have a list of opportunities? And when I get anything done, do I consider it as, all right, so I got rid of one more task, or I take it as a victory? There's all sorts of ways to reinterpret what you're doing through the day. When I get something done, if I need to lift myself up, on a piece of paper, I'll handwrite, and handwriting is better than typing. Victories. Took out the trash. Is a victory. Start thinking about how you're reinterpreting the simple things in your life to prop yourself up in little ways and build a system so that you're not so much negotiating with yourself. You're creating a success system that's going to carry you so that you're not fighting yourself.
In negotiation, do you think it's better to reframe what you can't have to what you do get instead? So, for example, for alcohol, like, I can't drink tonight because I promised myself. Instead of saying, like, you know what, I'm not going to drink tonight because I'm going to wake up really early tomorrow and feel really good and go for a run or something like that.
Yeah, or you think about, When you want to have a drink, you're thinking about how you're going to feel right after you have a drink, whatever alcohol hit. You're focused on a point in the future where you feel better. If you want to get up early in the morning, and the fact that you're not having a drink makes you feel better first thing in the morning, that's a point in time to pick in your head to envision the outcome. Vision drives decision. Envision yourself feeling better and more rested when you get up in the morning. It's going to get you past the point of stress right now.
Yeah, incredible. Chris, I love where this interview is going, because then it's really a different take on what things that you've, applying this in the context of alcohol was a little bit challenging. I'm not going to lie. Like, I thought, I would love to talk to Chris, and I know that he can bring value, and you did. And so I'm really, like, excited about that. I want to ask you, what is something that you're working on right now that you're, like, really passionate about? And I'd love to learn more about that.
Well, all of it. I mean, we're having a great time. I'm going to point out two things in the people that we're coaching and training. So first of all, the website's blackswanltd.com, BlackSwanLTD.com. When you go there, we're going to ask you to subscribe to our newsletter. A box will pop up. It gives you negotiation advice that you get an email on Tuesday morning. One single concise article, usable, actionable, complimentary. Now, this also keeps you up on what we're doing through the course of the year. You'll find out what we're pulling together for people. In the fall, we're going to have a conference just for women. Women in negotiation, instructors are women. The attendees are just going to be women. They don't even let me go. And they get to talk about the challenges of life for women. We've got live in-person training events scattered throughout the year. They're expensive. But to get your habits going so that you realize the investment in yourself is worth it and you get the return on your investment, you start with subscribing to The Edge and gathering your momentum a little at a time. Now, if you're working independently, residential real estate agents, we just had a conference in LA last week. I gave away my own personal 2023 Chevy Traverse to the person at the conference that had the best story for how the Black Swan skills changed their life. This young lady came up to the front of the conference. We announced it at the end of the 2 days, and she broke into tears talking about the changes in her life came as a result of the use of the Black Swan skills. The next day, we dropped my 2023 Chevy Traverse off at her house. And I'm looking forward to doing that again next year. You come to your residential real estate, and we had a lot of people that weren't residential real estate agents. Our negotiation training is so good, they just came to the conference because it was a great price, and they wanted a shot at my truck. And we're going to do it again next year. I got to pick out what truck I'm going to drive around for a year. It's always going to be red. I love red, you know, a sexy red color. But I'm looking forward to doing that again next year. And then when you get involved in our training, you get into a tribe. The tribe that you were talking about before. This is a mutually reinforcing, success-oriented, life-enjoying, reducing the stress tribe, where everybody's having a great time, enjoying their life, and making more money at the same time.
Well, I fully am following what you're doing, so I think it's amazing, and I can endorse that because I'm on your mailing list as well. I love all that you're doing. I posted about doing our interview on my personal social accounts, and I can tell you that like no other interview, and I've done some high profile interviews, and everybody just came to just say how impactful your work is.
That's cool. I'm really happy to hear that.
And I looked over your book recently just to get some more info on Amazon, and having being an author, you know, I sold quite a few copies, and you only get about maybe like 2% reviews back in review or something like that, you know, like from sales, and you have 42,000 reviews on your Amazon book, which is just like blows my mind. It's just incredible. And all 4.7 or something like that overall.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm happy with the impact that it's had. It's been very satisfying, yeah. Very gratifying.
Well, I couldn't even imagine. So I'm just curious for my own benefit. Are you thinking about another book?
We've been toying, you know, we've actually done several collaboration books where I've contributed a chapter and other people are contributing chapters. You know, what the next book looks like that's just going to be focused on my philosophy. You know, that's still a couple of years off.
Now, that would be exciting. I'll definitely grab a copy or maybe if you have to send out advanced review copies, you know, you keep me on that list.
There you go. Amen. Yeah.
Well, hey, I want to give you the mic one last time to share anything that you'd like to as parting words.
Wherever you are, just get a little bit better at a time. Take it easy on yourself. You can do it. It's all learned. It's been people. You can do it. You got it in you. You were born with it. You can do it.
Yes. 100% agree with that. Chris, thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate your time today, and thanks for sharing.
Mark, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This podcast is brought to you by Sunnyside, the number one alcohol moderation platform, having helped hundreds of thousands of people cut out more than 13 million drinks since 2020. And in fact, an independent study showed that Sunnyside reduced alcohol consumption by an average of 30% in 90 days. And as one of our members shared, Sunnyside helps me stay mindful of my drinking habits. It's not super restrictive, so if I'm craving a glass of wine with dinner, I just track it and I move on with my week. If you could benefit from drinking a bit less and being more mindful of when and how much you drink, head on over to sunnyside.co to get a free 15-day trial. You'll get access to everything that we offer, including tracking and planning tools, coaching from our experts, a vibrant community of people just like you, and the motivation and advice to stay on track with your health goals, all with no pressure to quit. That's sunnyside.co.